the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by John Nicholson, a retired Racine Unified administrator, Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW-Parkside, Karen Sconser, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, and Chuck Wolbers, a transition and work experience teacher in the special education department at Tremper High School, also in Kenosha. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Welcome to the 2015 WGTD Education Matters Kenosha Unified School Board Candidates Forum. I'm your host, Karen Sconser. Three seats on the Kenosha Unified Board of Education are up for general election on April 7th, 2015. Three at-large board incumbents are up for re-election. Incumbents Carl Bryan, Tamara Coleman, and Mary Snyder face two challengers, Mike Falkowski and Tony Garcia. However, Bryan withdrew from the race after accepting an offer of employment from the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction. His withdrawal came after the deadline for his name to be withdrawn from the ballot. If Bryan wins in the general election, the vacancy will be filled by appointment. So we have four candidates here with us today, not Carl Bryan, but the other four that I mentioned. And I would just like to start by giving a little explanation about myself and my role in this, and then I'll explain the format for the forum. So I am a resident of Kenosha, and I'm also a parent of a fifth grade student at Epsola Dual Language School in Kenosha Unified. I'm also an associate professor of education at Carthage College in Kenosha, and therefore have a lot of experience with various KUSD schools through research projects, fieldwork, student teaching placements, interviewing KUSD personnel for this radio program, and through alumni of our program who now teach in the KUSD schools. I also served on the KUSD Board Personnel and Policy Committee from 2008 to 2010 with Mrs. Coleman. The format for our program will be as follows. Each candidate will have 1 minute to introduce him or herself and tell us why they are running and their qualifications for the position of school board member. After that, I will ask a series of questions, and each candidate will have 2 minutes to answer. I will give a 15-second nonverbal warning as your time is running out. Please adhere to the time limit as well as you can. The order of candidates will rotate with each question, so each candidate will have a chance to answer first, second, third, and fourth. If we have time for more than four questions, I will start the cycle over again. At the end, each candidate will have a chance to give a closing or summary statement. So we're going to start with introductions and opening statements. You have 1 minute each, and we're starting with Mr. Mike Falkowski.
Hello, my name is Mike Falkowski. I have three students in the Kenosha Unified District, one at Tremper, one at Lincoln, and one at Dimensions of Learning. I have a Bachelor of Art in Geography from the University of Wisconsin, and for my career, I work as a consultant with local governments down in Illinois, and really my skills out of there are from that job are analytical. I like to work with big ideas and break them into smaller pieces, and collaboration, because we had to get a lot of buy-in from our clients to use the technology to help them be more efficient. I've been going to school board meetings for about the last 3 years. I'm an involved parent. I've helped with some of the committees, and I'm on the Planning and Facilities Committee. And the reason I'm running right now is that I want to ensure that the district is creating an environment where all students can excel to their maximum potential.
Okay, thank you. The next one is Mary Snyder.
First of all, thank you very much for this opportunity to speak to the public. The main focus of KUSD must be student learning, high academic achievement for all, and skill building. My belief and commitment to this focus is why I want to be reelected to the KUSD School Board. I am at the end of my second term as a school board member after being a lifelong educator, being educated and an educator in this community. This district is very important, an important part of what makes Kenosha great, and it's been an integral part of my life. I came here with my job. Though I'm now retired from the classroom, my experiences provide valuable insight into systems within education as well as day-to-day tasks. To remain involved after teaching, I decided to run for the school board and become part of that movement. My past and present community involvement reinforce my belief that all community facets working together will provide the best educational opportunities for Kenosha students. I firmly believe in the team and collaborative approach, and I know that I can work well within that format to confront issues and solve problems.
Thank you. And the next is Mr. Tony Garcia.
Thank you for inviting me, Karen, and WGTD. The reason I'm running, I have extensive and diverse experience in community relations, civic affairs, and education service in southeastern Wisconsin. I am a former teacher. I have a Bachelor's of Art from Carthage College, International Business. I have a teaching certification from Rockford College. I have a Master's of Education, and also I finished my confirmation of a completion of the Program 51 Principals Licensure. And the reason I'm running is because I understand that there's have to be a voice in the community and reference to bring community involvement in our district and to represent all students, teachers, and community. Every student, every school education makes options.
Okay, thank you. And the last but not least, Mrs. Tamara Coleman.
Thank you. Thank you, Karen and WGTD, for the opportunity to share why I'm seeking re-election. I'm a lifetime resident of Kenosha and my husband of 19 years, and I have three daughters, two of which are KUSC graduates, and of course two of them are in college now, but we still have one as a freshman at Indian Trail High School and Academy. I have over 18 years of project management and finance experience, and I'm the current project manager for the Southeast Division of Junior Achievement. I've been involved with the district for the last 12 years before I decided to run for the board, now serving and ending my first term. I'm excited about my first term, specifically the last 11 and a half months. As the current board president, I've been able to have the opportunity to lead the board in accomplishing some amazing things, from board protocols and goals to district goals and all those great things, hiring a superintendent. We've done some amazing things. So I am seeking re-election. I've been known to be a committed and effective communicator and collaborate with all stakeholders. I have experience, integrity, and a proven track record. So I'm looking forward to the opportunity to serve again.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, the first question I have, and the first respondent will be Mrs. Snyder, is the proposed biennial state budget included a $150 cut per student per year, which amounts to over $3 million in cuts to KUSD. There's hope that the amount of cuts will be reduced. There's more discussion in the legislature about that, but assuming there will be some kind of cut, where is the money going to be cut from?
Well, that's a great question, and a lot of people are asking that, including the board. We've so far looked at probably 6 to 8 different scenarios, and we're in discussion. No decisions have been made at all, and no direct proposals have been made. But we have to look at everything. We have insurance costs. We have commitment to our staff. What we have agreed on is that the very last thing we want to cut is teachers in the classroom. We will try to avoid that at all costs. But obviously, somehow or other, we've got to come up with that amount of money. And with a budget this large and with students that many students that we're serving, we've got to find some ways to reduce those costs.
Okay. The next respondent to that question, Mr. Garcia.
Yes, I understand, and I did a little research. $150 per student, it's $150. Hopefully it will come, but, if it doesn't, it's looking at our budget, make sure that, we're accountable of each item. And I guess that's how we're going to find out how we could upset our, programs. I hate to talk about cutting programs because those are important in the district. But I guess is Mary said, checking our insurance. And, the topics that nobody wants to talk about. But, important is it's going back to the budget and go item by item and find out where we could cut back and hopefully, that could balance $150 per student.
Okay. Thank you. And Mrs. Coleman.
Thank you. And you're absolutely correct. This is an awesome question. And the board has been working diligently with leadership on coming up with different ideas and scenarios. A couple of the things that I want to make sure that has happened and will continue to do is making sure that we look at all operational budgets, each line-by-line item for each budget. We have to halt and cut any discretionary spending. We need to also make sure that any programming that has deemed ineffective, that we make sure that those programs don't come back. And then we also just need to make sure whatever we do and wherever we make any cuts, it can't affect student achievement. We worked really hard in the last year and a half to keep our class sizes down, to keep our teachers, you know, retained. And so we don't want to do anything that's going to affect student achievement. So we're always looking for ways outside of the classroom where we can make any necessary cuts. And just let me add one thing. It's $150 per pupil. We also have to just think about there could be other areas within the budget that are affected. Right now, we all keep thinking about this $3 million or $3.3 million that's equivalent to the $150 per pupil. But we have to think about other cuts that may be coming that may be from low enrollment and all those other things. So that 3.5 could very well grow. So we have to be smart now and be proactive now.
Okay, thank you very much. And Mr. Falkowski.
It was a great question, and I pretty much agree with a lot of what the candidates have already said here. I think we definitely have to look at the budget and look for things that we can remove inefficient programs, things that aren't working as well as we hoped they would. And we can also use this as a time to make the district more efficient. We can use technology to do things such as webinars, online training, things that, you know, reduce travel costs and some of the things that we've seen in the budget. I also would like to hopefully we're going to use the curriculum audit guidelines that we have to help us streamline how the district runs. There were some recommendations in there about how we can make administration and different parts of the district run more efficiently and streamline it, and that'll definitely help with costs because it's not just a cost this year. I think we're going to have tight budgets for the foreseeable future, and I think it's time for the district to look at how we're spending our money, how efficient we are in making sure we're running an efficient operation. And really, when it comes down to it, like everyone said, we have to protect the classrooms, and not just the teachers. We have to protect the support people for the students, especially for the special needs students, to make sure they have the people and the assistance that they need there.
Okay. Thank you all very much. Okay, my second question, and actually you are going to be the first person to answer this, Mr. Falkowski, yep. Is a recent story on National Public Radio highlighted a looming problem. As baby boomer teachers approach retirement, at the same time, fewer young people are going into teaching. Together, these trends point to an upcoming teacher shortage. What do you think KUSD can do to attract and retain young teachers in this, what's soon to be a seller's market?
That's another great question. And I think, you know, also with other things going on in the state here, I've also heard that our state teaching colleges are seeing reduced enrollment in those colleges as well. So what we need to do is we need to make, like any employment, any place, it has to be a friendly place to work, a place that's welcoming to new employees. So we have to make sure that we have a decent benefit package for them. We have to make sure we have a fair handbook for them that doesn't punish them in any way. Like right now we have a fine in there. If you don't give at least 60 days notice to the district, they will apply a $2,000 fine to you, which I think was going to push people away from coming to our district. And we just have to make sure our starting wages are competitive with the districts around us so that we look as attractive as other districts do.
Okay, thank you. Mrs. Snyder?
Thank you. Yes, this is a big problem, and it is something that I've been looking at as well, as I know the colleges in Kenosha have been trying to help with. I think one of the ideas, too, that I want to make is that it needs to be a place where people are comfortable. Nobody goes into teaching to be rich. Nobody expects to be. But they do expect respect. They do expect cooperation and consideration. And they do expect to be able to work with the students in the classroom, because that's why people go into education. They want opportunities to teach students in the classroom, to build relationships with them, and to promote the academic achievement, promote social growth, promote all the things that educators want to do. We need to be concentrate on creating that kind of an environment for teachers to want to be here. And I've had teachers who've come from other districts who talk about that, who talk about why they stay here. And I think we need to grow that. I think we as a board can do a better job of working in partnerships with the staff, not just the teachers, but all staff members, that we have a collaborative, cooperative environment where people are shown the respect they deserve and where they have a chance to improve the academic achievement of all students and have a chance to work with the students, which is why they went into the careers in the first place. We need to be that place.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Garcia?
Very good question. As a former teacher, I understand we have to be open. We got to make sure that, as being a former teacher, it's more of a gift because, you know, you're going to educate students. You got to make sure that they come in with an open mind. They have to think out of the box. But again, the district have to promote that teachers. I understand that statistics show that one of every five students within 3 or 4 years, they out of five, I think three of them seek different careers. You know, and the problem is, you know, why? But we, you know, it's a different generation of teaching kids. You know, they have to come up with open mind, and the district has to really support them, really give them all the resources that they need to go over the 5 years, and then you know, once after the 5 years, I'm sure, you know, they're going to make that as a long career. But the important is to make sure that, you know, we get good qualified teachers. And you know, I've talked to a lot of teachers out there. They love the passion of teaching in classes, but sometimes they don't get the support that they need to make this successful. And, you know, that's very important to make sure that the district give them all the resources that they need.
Okay, thank you. And Mrs. Coleman.
Thank you. I agree. It's a great question. I first think we need to leverage our partners that we have right here locally between Gateway, Parkside, and Carthage. And I know that they have a shortage, but we can leverage that by working with the high schools. And we have to start speaking positive about being a teacher. I think sometimes we focus on all the negative things about being a teacher, but we need to kind of twist that ideology. Teaching is a wonderful thing. You have to be a special individual to teach. And I think that we sometimes focus on too much of the negative. We need to have an environment of commitment, collaboration, and communication with our teachers. Mrs. Schneider is absolutely correct. Professional development is important. Retaining those teachers is important. Giving them the resources and tools that they need to do their job. Because ultimately, all they want to do is teach. You know, and I think sometimes the board and administrators get in the way of that. Let them teach. That's all they want to do. So we have to, you know, have that environment for that, for them to do that. Professional development is also very important for our teachers. We have a lot of teachers that have asked for professional development. I want to correct Mr. Fakulski. We do have webinars for our teachers already. They do them all the time. We have, they go to the ESC building where they're trained by teachers. Other teachers are training teachers. So we have those opportunities available for our teachers. We just have to find ways to continue to do those things, capitalize on them more. And then, of course, leveraging our opportunities with our partners and getting the teachers in the classroom at the college level and show that teaching is a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful career.
Okay. I just want to take a moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to WGTD Education Matters Forum for the Kenosha Unified School District candidates. We are here with KUSD School Board candidates Mary Snyder, Tony Garcia, Tamara Coleman, and Mike Falkowski. The third question I have for you, and Mrs. Coleman will answer it first.
Yeah.
Kenosha Unified has several charter schools. And this afternoon, I spent some time crunching numbers. And if you compare the K through 8 charters with the regular K through 5 schools plus the middle schools, the K through 8 charters have half as many low-income students, half as many special education students, and half as many English language learners. How do you think this came about? Is it an issue? And if so, what do you think should be done about it?
This is an awesome question. Thank you so much for asking it. The board has already been looking into this. When we decided to expand our charter schools, specifically K-Tech, one of the things that we really expressed as a concern was the low enrollment for our African-American Hispanic students. We were very concerned about that. And I know that the administrators there are working on that. I think the biggest struggle is there's no transportation to those charter schools. And that's huge for our families that may have parents that, you know, if they're single family homes or parents that work and they can't get their kids there in the morning because they're depending on that transportation. So one of the things that I know that I would like to look at is transportation opportunities for our students that want to go to the charter schools and that don't have the flexibility to do so. We also have to target students, especially our special needs students, and make sure that the enrollment at those schools look like the communities, especially that the schools are in. So the board is already looking at those things and those options and trying to come up with ways strategically with the administrators on how we can grow those charter schools. The numbers are very disturbing. You look at dimensions of learning, they're only at 39.6%, K-Tech 28.4%, Brompton 27%, but that's their whole student population. So we definitely need to look at minority enrollment there, low-income enrollment there, and see what ways we can come up with to get those schools looking like the buildings that they should.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Falkowski?
All right, thank you. First, I want to actually correct Tamara. When I was talking about webinars, I was talking about reducing administrative travel expenses, where we see $20,000 to $30,000 a month in these agendas for travel and hotels. I'm just looking at different ways to make those more efficient so we don't have to travel as much. That's what I was going with the webinar. With the charter schools, I do agree with Ms. Coleman on that, that the biggest barrier is the transportation, that they have trouble getting their kids to school. What we need to do is communicate better with the parents, collaborate with them, give them the information, explain how the charter lottery works, and make sure they're enrolling their kids, that all the parents in the district are understanding the process and the deadlines and making sure they're getting their paperwork in, and you know, making sure they're getting the help they need to fill out that paperwork correctly so that we have as many students as possible being put in this lottery, which will increase the odds of students from all groups being placed in these charter schools.
Okay, thank you. And Mrs. Snyder?
Yes, thank you. And I'll begin a little bit just to address Mike's question about the webinars and the dollars. One of the situations, budgeting is a very complicated process. And the dollars that we are using for professional development, particularly for travel, are coming from Title I and outside funding, which cannot be used for operational expenses. So you can check those numbers. Over 90% of our travel dollars are coming from title dollars or grant dollars that cannot be used for operations. So the amount that we're using is pretty minimal. To address the question you asked, and this is something that we've been debating, I do want to start on a little more positive note, and that is we've seen growth, that the charters have increased the numbers of minority students and poverty-level students over the last year, and I have specific data. It's on the website if you want to see it. So it's getting better. It's not anywhere near where it needs to be. And I agree with Mike. Part of what we need to do, we need to be sure that all parents and students know about the opportunities, know how to do the forms, fill them out, get them in. One of the things we can't do is set quotas. We're not allowed to do that by law, so we can't have so many students with special needs or so many students of color. We cannot do that. It has to be a lottery system. But we need to do a much better job of getting everybody involved in the lottery so that those numbers will equal out and that all of our students have the opportunity to participate. I think parents, yes, need to be involved, but I also think staff members need to help because some students don't have parents who understand this system at all or who have the time to commit to do this. We want to reach all our kids. So we need to look at how can we reach every student and make sure they are finding the opportunity for education that best suits what they need and want. And we need to do that through better communication and collaboration, like Tamara says. We need to do a better job of that and make sure. But the numbers are growing. It's getting better, and it's not a problem we're ignoring. We are trying to address that issue.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Garcia.
Yeah, I believe we got three charter schools here. But I do concur with my candidates here that parent involvement, when I speak to, especially to the Hispanic students and the parents, you know, they kind of figure that, you know, it's only for smart students to go to charter schools. And I said, no, it's not. It's a lottery that they have. But because they're not really educated how to fill out the paperwork so we can get, you know, more minorities participating in charter schools. But the point is, you know, like Mary says, you know, get the staff involved, get the parents and stuff involved, and make sure that information is given to the parents, the community, so they know that there's a choice out there. And, you know, and you know, I would like to emphasize that most of the, you know, Hispanic students, they think it's only for smart students that go to charter schools. I said, no, it's a lottery. You can apply for it. And I think once we educate the community, I think, you know, that would open up more, actually open up the doors for more students to be part of these charter schools. And I think the charter schools that we have in the districts are great. They're very good. And parents that the students participate, they're very grateful for it.
Okay. Thank you very much. And you're going to be the first up for this next question. I'm sure you've heard this one before. Along with candidates for the school board, the April 7th ballot contains a referendum for improving athletic facilities in KUSD. What is your stance on the referendum and why? Mr. Garcia.
Thank you. As I did have a chance to present to the Hispanic pastors in the community in reference to the referendum, I do support it because I feel that students that participate in different activities, they perform better in classes. And, you know, statistics show that. But the important is, you know, we're going to have, Bradford's going to have a new stadium. And I think it's very important because it's gonna also help with the Tremper Stadium, businesses come to our district here, new business, the first thing they look, you know, what kind of sports the district has, and that's very important. You know, having a new stadium, having, you know, a quality sport out there that their kids can be part of the education, I think is very important. But, you know, if it doesn't pass, as you know, I understand there's only $4 million in the budget there. But, you know, once that's gone, then, you know, what are we going to do? And, you know, I do support the April 7th. And it's good because it's going out for referendum. We let the community choose that.
Okay. And next up for that question is Mrs. Coleman.
Thank you. I wholeheartedly support the referendum. It's long overdue for Bradford High School to have their own facility. I'm excited about that. However, Tremper has some major repairs that need to take place. And if this referendum does not pass, it's about $4 million that will have to come out of the facility's operational budget to, you know, fix those, and that is their budget. So that would wipe out their entire operational budget. So it's important that this does pass to help the Bradford students, the Tremper students, and then Indian Trail will get some major upkeep that they need for their facility. It'll also bring an opportunity for additional revenue to the city. I have the opportunity of attending the CABA forum that our facilities department was doing, educating the community about this referendum. And at CABA, you know, the business community was very excited about the additional revenue that'll come to the city, because you'll be able to have tournaments and things like that that will be able to bring additional things to the city. So that's exciting for us. Also, our students. I mean, we're always talking about student achievement. You know, this is about our students, and the students will have an opportunity to do more. We had an opportunity to see the scheduling that's currently happening with the existing layout, and it's crazy to see how these coaches are manipulating the data to make sure that different sporting activities can be have practice times. So this is needed from all angles. So I wholeheartedly support it. I do hope people vote yes on April 7th. It's definitely needed for our community and for our students.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Falkowski?
All right, I'm going to go back one time on what Mr. Snyder said. I do understand those grants are used to fund transportation, or being to fund those conferences. But my question would be, those grants that are designated for schools, are they more appropriate use at those individual buildings as opposed to for this travel and hotel lodging? Getting back to the referendum, I support it. I mean, there's no reason not to support this referendum. There's, as I said, there's new facilities. There's artificial turf. It's going to be less maintenance, so there's going to be less costs involved with keeping this going forward. There's $4 million that need a repair. And I don't know, at the last facilities meeting, they didn't say it would wipe out the budget, but they'd have to make hard decisions about what they're going to repair. Maybe they can't fix the bleachers because they'll have to use that money for a roof repair or something like that. So these may get put off even longer. And we actually have had accidents at Tremper. So I think it's important to get those fixed before we have a tragedy there, you know, before someone actually dies. So I'm for this referendum, and I hope the rest of the community will support it as well.
And Mrs. Snyder.
Okay, and I'll add the fourth comment in strong support of the referendum. I see it as an opportunity for us to grow that we wouldn't have in another way. We're in the process. We're retiring a debt so we can extend it. We can use the funds for maintenance only and facilities only. We can't use it for operations. Those dollars are earmarked in that process. So it's a narrow opportunity for us not to increase taxes, but to still extend the debt that we have, and still actually, in fact, taxes are going to decrease regardless of whether it passes or not to a different level, of course, but they will decrease. So I don't want people to think it's going to cost them any money. It's not. And I agree that it can bring money into the city. Part of the presentation we saw was they can't hold regional or just area track meets in the tracks because our tracks are not big enough. They don't have, and they're not safe enough. And I've been on those bleachers at the Tremper over at that stadium, and it's dangerous. Children can fall through them. I mean, there are gaps in them. And every year, our facilities people spend days over there re-welding and re-screwing those bleachers together, and that's a waste of time. So we have an opportunity here to really improve facilities that's not going to cost the taxpayers extra dollars and bring actual revenue and more interest to the district. And any research you read is going to tell you that students who participate in athletics and fine arts, things that our district is so proud of, do better in school. They do better all around as citizens. They do better academically. They're more well-adjusted socially, and they have better opportunities for everything in the future. So those are a big part of what Kenosha Unified is about, and I think this is a great opportunity to expand those for our students and to help enrich the value quality of life in our city.
Okay, thank you. We are going to have time for at least one more question, but I just wanted to stop and reintroduce. I'm Karen Sconzer, your host today for this Kenosha Unified School District Candidate Forum. We are here with KUSD School Board candidates Mary Snyder, Tony Garcia, Tamara Coleman, and Mike Falkowski. So we're going back around to the beginning. So the person to respond to this question first will be Mrs. Snyder. As you may be aware, the Common Core State Standards and accompanying testing have been controversial in Wisconsin and across the nation. The governor has signaled that he would like districts to have the autonomy to keep the Common Core standards and tests or possibly just select their own standards and tests. So what is your stance on this issue?
My stance on the big issue is that all schools should be using the same standards to be evaluated. All the schools in the state are receiving public taxpayer dollars, and we have a lot of mobility in our district and in all the districts around the state. So what is covered in third grade should be covered in third grade, and one way to do that is assessment. The Common Core, I guess I don't feel as strongly that it has to be the Common Core, although I don't know what would substitute for it since we've spent 3 or 4 years developing the process and looking at curriculum to meet the Common Core, but we need some kind of standardization. The implementation of this has been a real challenge for our staff. The things that they've had to do and redo, the technology bleeps that we had another message yesterday that there's another change, there's a delay in when we can do this testing now because the state isn't ready. So this has nothing to do with what our teachers are doing in the classroom or what the district as a whole is doing. We're doing what we need to do. I think there needs to be standardization, yes. I think things should be measurable. And I think people should be accountable for what our students know and are able to do, including the students. Common Core is a way to do that. It also helps standardize things across the country nationally. So I'm not afraid of that. I think our students can measure up to anybody. But I think the implementation has got some real problems and for all districts around the state, and that needs to be taken care of.
Okay, thank you. Same question, Mr. Garcia.
Yes. The Common Core standards, I feel that whatever the governor is going to propose, you know, we have to prepare for it. We got to make sure that, you know, if we have a chance as a district, as a school board to analyze this, you know, I would like to have community involvement. I would like to have teachers' involvement, administrators' involvement to really come up with a good Common Core standard for a district. I think it's very important. Communication. Make sure that if it does decide to change it, you know, I want to make sure that, you know, the community has or involvement has a voice on it. And more important, you know, like I said, make sure that the teachers, administrators, because, you know, they're in the trenches, they know what works. And, you know, and we have to look at it as an open mind to make sure that, you know, we get the best Common Core standard in our district.
Okay, thank you. Mrs. Coleman.
Yes. Common Core is a huge topic right now, but I just want to start off by saying Common Core is not a curriculum. It is just a guide. And I think sometimes people get that misconception that it's actually the curriculum, but it's not. We have some amazing educators here in Kenosha Unified that are doing an extremely great job, and they're working very hard to ensure that our curriculum is aligned throughout buildings. So in saying that, I want to say that whatever Common Core, whatever it is that's going to be called, I think what I want to see is that it's consistent, and it's consistent through all grade levels at all buildings, and that we have standards and benchmarks for our students. That is what I want to see, and that's what we have to do. We shouldn't be testing just to be testing and just to say that we tested. There needs to be some standards and benchmarks that are measurable and that students can either, you know, make improvement from those or continue to excel. Implementation is huge, and being a project manager, I know that implementation is probably the hardest piece of project management, and it's always the struggle area for anything that you're doing. And so I think we've struggled a little bit with implementation due to DPI's continuous changes and setbacks. This is why I think it's so important for us to have a louder voice on the state, at the state level, with us being the third largest district, we should be expressing our concerns a little bit stronger than we have done in the past. That's why I think we need a louder voice. Let them know that this is not acceptable. It's affecting our students. It's affecting our teachers. And so I think it's important for us to express those concerns. Teachers are being notified. They are communicated to right away once we know. So the communication piece I'm not as concerned with because the teachers are notified. It's still frustrating, but it is they are being notified. So, again, Common Core is not the curriculum. It's just a guide. But whatever we use, it's got to be consistent and have standard and benchmarks.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Falkowski.
I agree about Common Core and having a standard for the standard sets of standards so that we know kids in every grade and every school across the states that are part of Common Core are learning similar things, because it's not just mobility in the district, but it's also mobility regionally and across the nation. And we like to know that somebody who went to third grade in Florida can come to Kenosha and pick right up or close to where the kids here are and could take off from there. I think some of the confusion, as Tamara says, Common Core is not a curriculum. It is actually just a set of standards, and it's also not the ceiling. You don't have to go to those standards and stop. It could be the floor. You can say these are our minimum standards, but as Kenosha Unified, we actually want to achieve more. So it's up to each district to decide how they want to use those standards. And when it comes to some of the weird things you hear about the curriculum, again, that's up to the district to decide and to make sure they're reviewing the textbooks. And I know when we adopted the math curriculum, we did a very good job reviewing the textbooks and looking what's in there. And I have confidence, again, when we pick the textbooks that are aligned to Common Core, that we will find things that are appropriate and do not have inoffensive material. My biggest beef with Common Core is all the testing, all the standardized testing. I think there's too much of it, and I think it cuts back on the time for other, especially elementary school, it cuts back on the time for social studies and science and classes like that. I don't think the kids are getting enough of that in elementary school. I also think that it doesn't promote creativity or creative thinking. I think it's just too much. When you're creating students that can respond to a test, it's sort of like creating a robot. They can just spit back an answer to a question or memorize answers. I want to see our students be able to think out of the box and make sure that they can think critically, because going forward, there's going to be a lot of technology. There's going to be a lot of new careers out there, and it's going to involve students and future students with having the ability to think creatively and be able to problem solve by looking at all the aspects of an issue.
Okay, thank you very much. I think we do have time for one last question, and you will be the first one to answer this, Mr. Falkowski. Okay. So another item tucked into the biennial budget is a new board appointed by the governor that can name charter authorizers, who can then authorize any kind of charter school, including for-profits, to open in any district with two or more quote-unquote failing schools. So Kenosha would qualify. How would you sell parents on the regular KUSD schools if these charters start to appear in this district? What is great about KUSD that a charter chain cannot offer?
Well, one of the things that Kenosha Unified has is it has centralization. It has 40 schools working together to share resources. An independent charter school is not going to have as much access to technology or the special needs. You're not going to be able to move people around. In Kenosha, we can move people around to where the needs are. So a school doesn't necessarily have to staff all those positions. I also think that we have great fine arts. I mean, a lot of charter schools are going to have, I think, trouble trying to fund the band programs we have and the choir programs we have. And I think our sporting facilities, too. We have, you know, great football teams and actually great sports all the way around. I think charter schools would have trouble competing that as well. And I'd also say we have, at the high school level, we have, I think, a pretty good program for the high flyers. We have the advanced placement and the honors courses that really help them. So I think at the high school level, we definitely have that to offer to show that we can actually challenge kids and push kids to their full potential there.
Okay, thank you. And Mrs. Snyder.
I have many of the same concerns as Mike has just expressed. For, you know, a governor's board to assess and to set a curriculum in a district with taxpayer dollars just doesn't seem fair. First of all, everything should be equitable. Every school should have to service all students. Every school should have to provide all the systems and all the needs, all the courses that are offered. And with the charter system, even the way that it exists now, within Kenosha, we don't deal with that. but in Milwaukee they do. And if the charter can't offer a program, students can actually get on a bus and go play on the football team in another district or another school with no dollars following them. So it is very convoluted and very difficult. There are also private charter schools that have gone bankrupt in this state and left the teachers who had, there was one in Racine, that the teachers didn't even get paid for 4 months. The charter school went bankrupt, and those students all went back into the public schools with no dollars following them because they were vouchers. So there's too much danger. The biggest point for me is, if we want to help public education, how could we think this is the way to do it? If we really want to believe in public education and believe that every student has the right to a public education in the community, taking dollars away from those schools is not going to improve those schools. It's going to create more divisiveness, more competition, and less opportunity for all the students because they're not going to have everything that they have right now. And we work very hard to provide students with as many opportunities as we can in Kenosha. And I think a system like this would be very detrimental and harmful to the educational system as a whole.
Okay. Mr. Garcia.
In reference to charter schools, they don't have all the resources that the public school has. I think 92% of our students participate in our public schools. So we have a good percentage of students that go to charter schools. But I guess, you know, not all the resources are there. You know, we have to make sure that and educate the community, make sure that, you know, they be able to if they do decide to send their child there, they got to make sure that, you know, that they can have an impact on choosing the right school for their students, because not charter schools have all the resources that the public schools has.
Okay. And Mrs. Coleman.
Thank you. First thing, I'm a little confused about that 92% that Mr. Garcia was just talking about. I don't think it's 92%. I think it's a little lower than that.
Is it?
Yeah, okay. So I would have to double check. Well, I wouldn't confirm that number. But
thanks for clearing that.
Yeah. Charter schools, I think one of the beautiful things that I love about our community is that we allow our parents and our students so many opportunities and options. And when you have a charter school with a voucher system, you lose a lot of that. Our theater arts program and our fine arts program is top notch. They can go up against anyone in any other department in this country. Our sports is top notch. And so you start to lose those things when you go into a voucher system because they don't have all that flexibility. That's one of the reasons why I love our choice and charter schools that are under the KUSD umbrella, because it gives those parents the flexibility to still be a part of the public system, but then also it gives them an opportunity to specialize in areas that their children may want to focus in. When you get in ninth grade and you already know that you want to be a mechanical engineer and you can be able to go to Lakeview Tech and have all those classes right out the box those 4 years and work with Gateway and already start your collegiate career, that's huge. And so when you have a charter school that's under voucher system, you may not get that flexibility. So I think that would be one of the downfalls of having charter schools within voucher, along with a lot of the things that Mary Schneider already mentioned, but definitely the amount of options that we through public schools offer, you wouldn't have that in a charter voucher system.
Okay. Well, we actually now are very close to running out of time. So everyone has about 20 seconds to give their last pitch for why the listeners should vote for you. So we're going to start with Mrs. Coleman.
Absolutely. Again, thank you for the opportunity. I have already proven my success just being on the board this last couple of years, and I'm really excited about the opportunity to be able to continue to be committed, continue to be an effective communicator, and collaborate with all stakeholders. So please vote for Tamara Coleman on April 7th. I'm listed 4 on the ballot, so if you want more commitment, communication, and collaboration, you'll vote number 4 for Tamara Coleman. Thank you again for the opportunity.
Okay. Mr. Garcia.
Yes. Thank you. Thanks again, Karen and WGTD, for inviting us here. All I can say, listeners out there, we have 4 great candidates running for school board. You know, and if I do want you to support April 7th, I will bring leadership. I will bring visions to our district. I will bring a structure. I will bring accountability. And I will advocate service education by all students and inspire public confidence. And again, I would like to support April 7th. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Falkowski.
having three students in the district, my focus is always going to be on the students first, putting the students first. That's my priority. When it comes to the budget, when it comes to developing a strategic plan, that's always going to be what I'm thinking about. So, and the financial responsibility to make sure that we have a district that serves the kids and uses the money the most effectively. So I hope I can count on your support on April 7th.
Thank you. And Mrs. Snyder.
Okay, it is the school board's job to remember and insist that students remain the district's first priority. All the board decisions should reflect that priority. I have experience, been on the board for